Me from Cape Coral.
Please help me.
My name is Bobby, and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let's see if I can figure out how to work this thing here. Tech support. There it goes. All right. My name is Bobby, and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My God, there's a lot of people here. Holy smokes. First time I spoke at this meeting, it was about 15 of you at a different church somewhere, man. This is awesome. You guys are rocking. There's a lot of empty bar stools and park benches out there tonight because you guys are all here. That's cool. It's a miracle, man, because, you know, the truth of the matter is we're all a bunch of dead folks, and we're here, you know. That's really cool. This whole thing started for me a long, long time ago. I think I was probably an alcoholic long before I ever found the luxury of alcohol to numb my pain, you know. I exhibited those behaviors early on. How about that? You know, I would say probably my first hardcore addiction was TV. And I won't say that, I'm not saying I watched too much TV as a kid, because who didn't, you know, but what I'm saying is that when I wasn't cool with the way things were going in my life, I went and lived with the people on TV. You know, when I needed brothers and sisters, I went and lived with the Partridge Family. You know, when I needed a dad, I went and lived with Eddie's father. Most of you here probably have no idea what I'm talking about those programs. Check out Nick at Night. Anyway, you know, whatever the deal was, that's where I went and lived, you know what I mean? Because I wasn't cool with where I was. I never was cool with where I was. From the time I was old enough to look around and figure out where I was never cool with it. And there came a point early in my life where I didn't know where my reality began and my imagined reality ended, you know. Early on in my life, I found out that if I acted like an idiot, I would get a lot of NyQuil. And so I acted like an idiot a lot. I had the longest running cold in the history of pediatrics. My family are a bunch of drunks, some dope fiends, criminals and whatnot. Bikers, strippers, a lot, you know. That's the sociological aspect, I guess. There's a lot of different schools of thought on this thing. You know, there's a genetic aspect of it. Well, my mom and dad were both drunks. Absolutely. Hardcore. You know, my dad's life was such self-will run riot that my half-brother and I were born the same month, 5 days apart, to two different women that lived on the same street. Real deal. You know what I mean? Dad was a drunk, but he was a busy drunk. Is my mom and dad being a drunk what made me a drunk? Nah, I don't know. It was the fact that I exhibited those early signs of addiction and pursued them what made me a drunk? I don't know. You know, was it sociological? Was it physiological? I don't know. I know what the book says. The book says that I have a physical allergy coupled with a peculiar mental obsession. What happens is when I put booze in my body, I want more. Regardless, I want more. And the other thing is this whole thing in my brain tells me that somehow, someday, I might be able to drink like a normal person. That's primarily what makes me an alcoholic. Funny thing is I was never an alcoholic before I came to AA. I wasn't. I was a victim of circumstance. That's what I was, you know. I spent a great deal of my early life incarcerated. Did a lot of time as a kid. Was quite a run amok, had a lot of anger management issues, couldn't keep my hands off of other people's stuff or other people, etc., etc., etc. I got busted for my first felony when I was 9. Okay, I don't really talk a whole lot about the whole war stories of it all, but my life was basically ridiculous from the time that I got a hold of it, and stayed that way for a long time. And I did a lot of time as an adult as well. I've been committed to a couple of fairly well-known psychiatric institutions, including but not limited to Napa State Hospital. But that wasn't where you folks found me. You folks found me in the California Department of Corrections. And it's kind of interesting, too. This is something I just want to touch on real quick while I'm thinking about it. There's a rumor going around AA that this is a program of attraction rather than promotion. That is a rumor, okay? It is. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. Because if you guys hadn't came inside the prison, dragged me out of my cell to a meeting night after night after night, I wouldn't be here tonight. And if that's not promotion, I don't know what is. I mean, come on, you know. So please, don't fall victim to that that thing. We promote. We do. We stay away from advertising. We stay away from that kind of stuff. But we promote. I'll tell you a little bit more about how we promote later on. But anyway, so you folks came and found me. It was real interesting how it went down. There was this parole agent that was assigned to my case. And he looked over my record and he says, he pulls me out of my cell and he sits me down. He says, you know, seems to me that ever since you were a kid, every time you got busted, alcohol or some other mind-altering substance was involved. And I'm thinking that that might denote that you have a problem. I thought he was an idiot. You know, I didn't have a problem, you know. Here I was, you know, the picture of physical health, young strapping youth in my early 20s, had my whole life ahead of me, you know. I mean, I was trying to work out this little incarceration issue, but other than that, I was pretty wired. I had it going, you know. And he said, you know, I think you ought to go to these AA meetings. And I laughed at him. Because I had a lot of behavioral issues when I was doing time. You know, I was involved with the wrong crowd. That sounds so ridiculous. You're in prison. but there's a wrong crowd there, too. Everywhere you go, there's a wrong crowd. You know what I mean? I was kind of in the middle of them wherever I was. And so I was on a real restrictive program. Consequently, I was allowed to go to work. I was allowed to go and shower, obviously. I was allowed to go and eat. But I wasn't allowed to have any rec time. I wasn't allowed to hang out with the fellas, because it seemed like every time I was hanging out with the fellas, we were plotting to do something ridiculous, and something ridiculous would happen. So I spent a lot of time in my house. And he told me that I could get out of my cell for an extra couple hours every couple of weeks. And that sounded kind of cool, but I was like, you know, I'm not eligible for good time ever. Ever. You know, I'd stacked up enough ridiculous behavior while I was doing time that there was nothing that I could possibly do that would give me good time. So no matter what, I wasn't getting out until my date was up. So I didn't want nothing to do with the AA meetings, you know. And he said, well, you know, you get to hang out of your cell, you know, and there's no correctional officer supervision. It kind of piqued my interest. I thought I might be able to work that out. Nah, I'm not going to those AA meetings. And he said, you know, and they always bring coffee, donuts, and women. I was like, wow, I might be an alcoholic. And so I went, man. I went to the meetings, you know. It was every other Tuesday night, you know. And the coffee was weak. Nobody brought donut one. The only woman that ever showed up was like 80 years old. God rest her soul. She was such a wonderful lady. But bottom line is, you know, I'd done some time, but I hadn't done quite that much time yet. You know. But I did keep coming back, so there might be more to the story that I'm not telling. But nonetheless, I went to these meetings, and I can't tell you why, man. I don't know. There was this old dude, I'll never forget him. His name was Paul M. He's gone on his great reward as well. But he used to come up to these meetings every week for years and years and years, and this was his deal, you know. He'd never done any time, you know. I don't know what possessed him to want to go in the pen with a meeting, but it did. And he'd go up there, and he'd give his same old tired pitch every meeting. I mean, this guy, I don't know how old he was, but he's in bad shape. He's missing a leg, he's missing an eye, you know what I mean? He was hammered, you know? And I told you, man, I was a young, strapping youth in my 20s, you know what I mean? I had nothing to do except just be healthy and do time, you know? I mean, what's this guy going to tell me, you know? Because at that point in my life, the way I looked at everything was, if you hadn't been where I'd been or done what I'd done, you got nothing to tell me. And the one thing that we all share in common is this terminal uniqueness that allows us to back ourselves into one of these corners to where nobody's been where we've been or done what we've done, so nobody's got anything to tell us, you know? And this guy definitely never been anywhere I've been or done anything. He had sobered up in a chicken coop, for God's sakes. You know what I mean? He was not my guy. But nonetheless, so he kept going to the meetings, and he kept giving the same old tired pitch. And one time I heard him say something that I had never heard him say before. And it blew my mind, because he talked about feeling things I had felt, having not been where I had been. He talked about being alone in a room full of people. I was way hip to that. He talked about having a hole in your belly so big that you could feel wind blowing through it, and nothing you would put in your body could fill it up. I knew about that. He talked about being scared, so scared that you couldn't even run and not even know what you were afraid of. And I knew about that. And so I spent the rest of the meeting plotting to kill this guy so he wouldn't tell any of my secrets. And somewhere in there, and a little crack of possibility opened up in my otherwise closed mind. And I thought, well, maybe there's something to this thing. Maybe there's something to this alcoholism cootie that this guy's talking about, this disease. Maybe there's something to this. I don't know. And I'd like to tell you what happened was, I went back to my cell, I got on my knees, I had a spiritual experience, and became a groovy convict, and everything was everything. But it didn't go down like that. You know, I'm a knucklehead, you know. But I will tell you that I started thinking, and I started wondering, you know. A little time went by, and I was facing the parole board, not because I had become a cool convict, but because, you know, my date was up, and they couldn't hold me any longer. And I'll never forget it, man. I sat in front of that parole agent, that parole board member that I had sat in front of before, and he looked me right in the face, and he said, we're not releasing you by desert or merit. We are releasing you because by the laws of the state of California, we are forced to do so. The only solace that I find in that fact is that when you return, I'll never have to release you again. He let me go. But it was weird. Because, see, I got paroled on a Monday, which meant I got let out on a Tuesday. And that Tuesday happened to be my meeting day. And convicts are creatures of habit. So I got out, and I went about the business of finding me a meeting. It just so happened that where I was living, there was a meeting within arm's reach of where I was staying. I didn't know nothing about God back then, so I just figured it was just random coincidences. And so I went to a meeting, man. I walked through the door, and I'll never forget it, man. The squarest dude I had ever met in my life to date. Yeah? I mean, we're talking like Ward Cleaver would have looked at this dude and told him he needed to loosen up, you know? Came up, shook my hand, told me, man, I'm glad you're here, bro. Come on in. He set me in the back of the room because he could tell that I was a runner. Gave me a cup of coffee, and so there I was. And I tell you what, at that point in my life, I'd walked onto some of the toughest prison yards in California, and I had experienced levels of fear that most people never dare dream of. But I was never as afraid in my life as I was the moment I sat down in that room and I was looking at those people. They might as all well had guns trained on me, as scared as I was. I mean, I was panicked. So we got through the meeting, and there was this lady that was running the meeting. It's still a friend of mine today. And we got right almost to the end, and she called on me. And I panicked. And I did what all good convicts do. You know, I gave everybody my toughest prison yard stare and told them 10 reasons why they didn't want nothing to do with me, and 10 reasons why I was quite possibly the toughest individual they had ever met, 10 reasons why I was entirely too dangerous to be fooled around with, and that they ought to just let me get past them. And when I felt I'd made my point, I stopped. And they all clapped. And went in, they all told me they loved me. They told me keep coming back. And then they went to hugging on me, giving me phone numbers. And I was ruined. Absolutely ruined. Because I'm a lot of things, but first and foremost, I'm an alcoholic. An alcoholic's a lot like a puppy. If you rub it on its head and talk to it kind of nice, it'll follow you around anywhere you want it to go. They told me keep coming back, and by God, I was back there noon the next day. I'm back. And it went down like that for a while, you know, and I'd like to tell you that I dove into this thing, man, with both feet and got into the steps and did my boogie and became a real cool individual, but it didn't go down like that because I'm a knucklehead, you know. I spent the next 5 years living in what I've heard coined to the term stark raving sober. Yeah. I was absolutely out of my mind. I had no solution whatsoever. All I had was no drinking. I probably got thrown out of more bars sober than I ever did drunk. Managed to pick up a few felonies here and there. I mean, on and on and on. Lost my license indefinitely with prejudice while sober. I don't suggest you do it that way. I've seen a lot of people get dead doing it that way, you know, so don't follow that lead. At about 5 years sober, I was sitting in my house, literally drooling down the business into my pistol, because I was still packing back then, obviously, and I wasn't sure what to do. The bottom line was I couldn't live like I was living. I was scared to death to start drinking again, and I had nothing, no other way out, you know. So I'd sit there and start to shoot myself and then stop. Start and stop. Start and stop. And about an hour into this ridiculous little play that I was working on, my sponsor called me up. And he said, "Hey, bro, how you doing?" I said, "What do you think I told him?" "I'm fine." Luckily, he was a little wiser than that. And he said, "You know, bro, I don't think you are doing fine. I think you're getting ready to get yourself perished. And if you don't do this thing that we're doing, this is probably going to be the last time I talk to you. So let's do this thing." And we did. We got into these steps, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the solution to my drinking. And everything changed. Everything absolutely changed. I had no idea what I was in for when I showed up here. I thought I was going to stop drinking and things were going to get cool. I was going to get a Cadillac, pretty girlfriend, nice house, you know, because I just looked around. Everybody seemed to have a nice car, a nice house, and a pretty girlfriend. I thought, well, hell, I came to the right place. We started doing these steps, man, and it got ridiculous. My life has just been amazing since this little endeavor. But this is the part of the story where it all kind of changes, and this is where I start talking about God. If that bums you out, that's cool, because, man, that used to bum me out, too. You know, oh, man, somebody start talking about God, and I'd just be like, I got somewhere I got to be. You know, just assume, if that bums you out, man, just assume that when I say the word God, I'm talking about some cool character that hangs out around the rooms of AA that you may or may not have met yet. Just kind of leave the preconceived notions of what that is out. And we might be able to get through this with some semblance of sanity. First things first, man, the first step, simple stuff. My life's a train wreck. Okay, I myself always had problems managing my life, but the California Department of Corrections always stepped up to the plate for me and managed my life for me. My life was a train wreck from jump. You know, my life was an absolute shambles. It was not real hard to figure that out, you know. Can't believe that power greater than me could restore me to sanity. Well, I had walked into the rooms of AA. And at that point, that was about the biggest power greater than me that I could handle. You folks knew more than I did. My sponsor was smarter than me. And that's where it ended. And that was the end of my steps. And I was as good as it got. Then I jumped right to the 12th and started trying to carry the message. Which, I have a couple of tapes of that still, just to remind me. wow. Then the third step comes, and that's where we start talking about God, and that's where I started freaking out, you know. My sponsor sat down with me and he explained to me, there is no God part of the program. There isn't one. This is a spiritual program. Why do I need a God? Why can't I just do this with you, bro? That's what I told him. And that's when it got real. And I got the book up here tonight because I like to read out of the book as opposed to quote out of the book, because left to my own devices, I am subject to tell you anything. It's much better for me to read out of the book, because one word misplaced here or there, and the next thing you know, man, I'm pitching you some kind of stuff that I'm trying to sell you, and then we're all messed up, you know what I mean? Why did I need a God? Since you're in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in few rare cases, neither he or any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. So he told me, bro, you know what? You ain't going to make it. If you don't have some kind of higher power, it's going to bail you out in precarious circumstances that you're going to get yourself in. There's going to be a spot where nobody can help you. So as far as I was concerned, I was done. Because I couldn't find God. I looked for God everywhere, man. I've been dipped, dunked, sprinkled. I've had hands laid on me. I've spoken tongues. I've danced around naked out in the woods with folks. I even had a dude chase me around a tent one time in a tent revival with a snake. Real deal. Man, I mean, I was looking, you know. And I'm glad I didn't find God in that tent with that snake, because that was some creepy stuff. Where's God? It says right here in the book. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. It was so with us. I had no idea what that meant. And then I had a kid. And I'm looking at this kid, and I'm thinking, man, what if my son grows up to do blah? Or what if my son grows up to be blah? Or what if he does this? Or what if he does that? And I'm coming up with every possible horrible scenario that my son might be able to grow up and become or do. And I could not come up with anything that would make me hate him, make me want anything but the best for him, make me want anything but for him to not have to hurt. Yeah. And then I got it. That's that tiny little piece of God inside of me that allows me to look beyond my own shortcomings, fears, prejudices, and all the things that are wrong with me at another human being and love them that much. And so if that little scrap of God is just a tiny reflection of what that thing is, how much more does it love me? You dig? And then I got it. I was like, oh, okay, I got this God thing. That's cool. That's not the one they taught me about. I can do that one, you know. And so we ran. The deal is, you do this simple prayer. Simple prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties. Not because I've suffered far too long, but because that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, thy way of life. May I do that well always. Easy enough prayer. Done and done. Right after that, there's a disclaimer. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Now, I don't know about you, but I never read any warning labels, you know, it wasn't my deal. So I probably wouldn't have cared if the disclaimer was before it. But I didn't realize the magnitude and power of what I had just done. I had just made a deal with the most powerful entity in the universe that it could do with me as it pleased forever. And it said, okay. I don't know what kind of life you lived when you were out there, but if you ever borrowed money from any unscrupulous individuals, i.e. my family, and I had an epiphany, decided you weren't going to pay, they came to your house and they changed your mind. And those are just people. I just made a deal with the most powerful entity in the universe. It could do whatever it wanted to with me forever, and it said okay. So now we got two ways of doing this. You ever see a kid in the grocery store that wants something real bad and he can't have what he wants and he gets all mad and he starts hanging everybody's little arm crying, I want it, I want it. What's mom do? Drags his little butt along. Come on, girl, drag it. Drag it till you walk. That's me and God. God says, come on, let's do this thing. I don't want to. I'm busy, man. Desperate Housewives is on. I got... And he drags me until I walk. You know, it ain't about taking my will back. It's about dragging my feet. We're going where he wants to go. He's calling the shots. Because we made the deal. Done and done. We go right on into this fourth step, and it says that though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless it once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. The liquor was just a symptom. Blocking us. That tells us why we're doing the fourth step. Am I doing the fourth step so I can get a good look at the causes and conditions of my behavior? That's one of the things that happens. Am I doing the fourth step so that I can understand my fears? Well, that's part of what happens. Am I doing the fourth step so that I can bring to light my questionable sexual behavior? Absolutely, that's one of the things that happens. The reason I'm doing them is so that I can be rid of the things that are blocking me. Blocking me from what? This business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal, for when harboring such feelings, we shut off ourselves from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. So I'm doing this to get rid of the stuff that's blocking me from the sunlight of the spirit. Now, I did the prayer and asked him to help me with my difficulties, not because I've suffered far too long, not because I'm all cool now, but because they're going to get in the way of my helping somebody else. Okay. Now I've done the fourth step because I need to be rid of the things that are blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. Nowhere in here so far have we mentioned anything about a Cadillac, good-looking girlfriend, or a nice house. This is not about me. Powering forward. And I got to go in, I got to get real, and I got to do the fifth step. And that really scared me, man, because the statute of limitations hadn't run out on some of my fourth step. And I was concerned, you know what I mean, genuinely, you know. And I was also concerned about telling anybody the truth about me, you know what I mean, because I don't want anybody to know I'm scared of stuff. You know, that's the last thing in the world, man. That list of fears, I don't want to tell somebody I'm scared. Which, by the way, I'm only scared of two things, it turns out. Losing stuff I got and not getting what I want. Which pretty much encompasses everything I come in contact with on the planet. So I'm scared of everything. Isn't that cool? So we go in and we do this fifth step. And... why do we do it? Do we do it so we don't feel alone in the world with our secrets anymore? That's one of the side effects, absolutely. Do we do it because if we don't, we'll probably get drunk? It's true. It's one of the side effects that we will get from it. But when we're done with the fifth step, when we're done with our fifth step, it tells us exactly what we're going to get from it. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Okay? I did the fourth to get rid of the stuff that's blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. I did the fifth so that I could know God better. Okay? No Cadillac, no house, no girl yet. And not about me. We go forward with our sixth and our seventh. We do a prayer. When ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. Even though I gave all of Him to me before, they knew I was an alcoholic, and I'd probably hang on to the bad stuff. I pray now that you remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Not the ones that make me look like an idiot in public, because I still got a bunch of those. Obviously, me looking like an idiot in public is very useful to God, because it happens a lot. But the ones that will stand in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows, grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Again, still not about me. Haven't got to the me part yet. It's one of those fallacies we hear around the program. It's a selfish program. Not so much. Not so much. boogie forward, man. We get real. We get over our fear and do our eighth so that we can do our ninth. Ninth step. Why do I do amends? Is it so that I don't have to duck every time I hear a car backfire on the street? That is a side effect that will probably happen. Is it so I can lay my little head on my pillow at night and not have bad dreams about who I've been and where I've done? That is a side effect that will happen. Is it so I can look somebody in the eyes and not feel guilty? That will happen. It says here that our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Again, not about me. No Cadillac, no nice house, no pretty girlfriend. We're getting awful far into the steps here. Still not finding what I came here for. We get into our tenth, and our tenth is super important, man, because it keeps us right as we boogie. On page 86, there's this really cool thing that goes down, man. It tells you how to do it. Tells you the whole thing. Tells you when, tells you how. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful? Well, only at that one guy, and he had it coming. Were we selfish? Well, I got to get mine. It's a selfish program, after all. Dishonest? Well, that was that one thing, but he didn't want to know that anyway. Afraid? Nobody knows. Do we owe an apology? Well, there's that one guy, but I don't know his phone number anyway. Have we kept something to ourselves that should be discussed with another person at once? See all of the above. Were we kind and loving toward all? See all of the above. Where could we have done better? See all of the above. Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Not because I've suffered far too long, but because that would diminish our usefulness to others. I don't even get to feel sorry for myself anymore. I don't even feel guilty. I don't even get to do that, because that's going to diminish my usefulness to others. Because if I'm sitting around feeling bad about what I did, I'm not going to do anything to fix it. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Boom. Off and running. On awakening, this is our 11th step, we consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity. I can't even feel sorry for myself in the morning. Dishonest or self-seeking motives. I haven't even left the house yet. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking of our day, we may face indecision. Here we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought and decision. We relax, we take it easy, we don't struggle. This is the hitch. What used to be the hunch or occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it's not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. Man, I missed that part. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. I did not miss that part. It is absolutely phenomenal how insane I can go when I think that I'm doing God's will. It is madness. Hi, how are you? Wow, yeah, great. We're in line for coffee over here. You like coffee? So do I. How weird is that? I mean, of all the meetings in the world and all the people, you and I, we're here in the line together. How weird is that? That's really cool. You're married? So am I. We got even more in common. I think I love you. Let's move to another state and start a new life. Because it's God's will, obviously, because we're in this line together getting coffee. And that sounds ridiculous, but it's true. Been there, done that, sold the t-shirt. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more on the plane of inspiration. We will come to rely upon it. Yeah, it's way better. it's really important. Check in with your sponsor. Check in with your sponsor before you do anything like of consequence for a while. I'm going on 19 years, and I still check in with my sponsor a lot. Because I'm still ridiculous. That coffee thing really happened, man. And I was like 11 years sober. Yeah, real deal.
Oh, man.
Ridiculous. That's why we do the 10th and we do the 11th every day. You know what I mean? Because it's like, oh, well, you know, I didn't really do anything wrong today. I could probably just go to bed. Ah, well, I'm not really checking with God this morning because I'm like, kind of hurry, whatever. And then there you are with a coffee story. You know? So, ever vigilant. This is where we get to the good part, man. This is the stuff. This is the deal. This is the deal. This is what we're all about, man. We get to the 12th. This is the job. Turns out this is why I came here. This is why I was allowed to live. This is why I was allowed to stay sober. This is why I'm allowed to stand up here tonight. This is why I'm allowed to get up in the morning. This is why I'm allowed to have the coffee story and still stay sober and be able to come back and tell you about it. So I can do this 12-step thing, because that's what we're all here to do. And it tells me a lot about it in the 12 and 12. Practically every AA member declares that no satisfaction has been deeper and no joy greater than in a 12-step job well done. To watch the eyes of men and women open with wonder as they move from darkness into light. To see their lives quickly fill with new purpose and meaning. To see whole families reassembled. To see the alcoholic outcast received back into his community in full citizenship. And above all, to watch these people awaken to the presence of a loving God in their lives. These things are the substance of what we receive as we carry AA's message to the next alcoholic. That's my Cadillac, man. It really is. That's my beautiful girlfriend, my wonderful house. That's everything. Because really, really, I've been some cool places and I've done some cool stuff since I've been sober, man. I mean, I've been places that nobody should be allowed to go, and I've done things that nobody should be allowed to do. I've been offered successes that are just that are truly ridiculous. And some of them were really cool. But the coolest stuff that happens for me is that I get to be there when dead people come back to life, man. Yeah. I get to be there when crazy people go sane. I get to be there when mothers and daughters look at each other and they realize that it's nobody's fault. Yeah. I get to be there when kids start to love their parents again. I get to be there when all that happens. There's doctors that spend thousands of dollars and many years in school to be there when dead people come back to life. There's psychiatrists that do the exact same thing to be there when crazy people go sane. There's priests that spend their whole lives in seminary to be there when people are restored to some semblance of life. And all I had to do was die. That's all any of us had to do. You know? I get to be there when dead people come back to life. It's amazing. It's the coolest thing in the world. Talks a little bit more about 12-step work. Nor is this the only kind of 12-step work. We sit in AA meetings and listen. Not only to receive something ourselves, but to give the reassurance and support which our presence can bring. If our turn comes to speak at a meeting, we again try to carry AA's message. Whether our audience is one or many, it is still 12-step work. There are many opportunities even for those who feel unable to speak at meetings or who are so situated that they cannot do much face-to-face 12-step work. We can be the ones who take on the unspectacular but important tasks that make good 12-step work possible. Perhaps arranging for the coffee and cake after meetings, where so many skeptical, suspicious newcomers have found confidence and comfort in their laughter and talk. This is 12-step work in the very best sense of the word. Freely ye have received, freely we give, is the core of this part of step 12. That's the deal. Doesn't matter whether you're making a coffee, whoever that was, thank you very much. You really know how to pull that off. Good stuff. AA coffee's the best. You know what I mean? It really is. There's nothing like AA coffee. I can walk into any convenience store in America, and I can tell if there's somebody in AA working there. You know what I mean? I mean, we know how to do it, you know? If you're setting up the chairs, if you're meeting people at the door, if you're just sitting there being in the meeting so it's not empty, Doesn't matter what it is. You might be saving somebody's life. You know, there's some empty chairs in this room tonight. You know, and the reason that there's some empty chairs in this room tonight, I believe, is each and every one of us have a particular way of saying this thing. Each and every one of us have a particular way that God's going to use us as a tool. And there's somebody out there that can only hear it from you. So somebody's guy or somebody's girl's not here tonight. They're waiting for you to do this thing that we do. So if you're new or comparatively new and you haven't worked the steps yet, get on it, man, because it's not just your life. Somebody else out there waiting to get this thing. They can't get it from nobody but you. They can't get it from me. See, when I find my guy, I get to go home. I don't got to be here no more. I hope he's not here tonight because I got stuff to do tomorrow. But that's the deal. Each and every one of us is a specific tool for a specific job that has to do with another specific tool for another specific job. That's what we're here to do. We're here to be there when dead people come back to life. And as far as I'm concerned, I am highly, highly overpaid and sadly underworked. Because I love this, man. I love it. Every chance I get to do this thing, every chance I get to be there and peek out one corner of my eye and see a miracle happen, that's the stuff, you know. If I'd have jumped into this thing with both feet right from the beginning, I'd have probably been a lot further along than I am. True story. So I'm probably not who I could be. You know, if this thing keeps going like it's been going for the last 18 and change, I got no idea how weird it's going to get. So I sure ain't who I'm going to be. But I'll tell you this. Every morning that I wake up and I look around my life, I know for a fact that I am not who I used to be. And if that's as good as it gets, that's more than I got coming. If you heard anything that made sense to you tonight, man, hang around because you're probably an alcoholic. If you didn't, hang around and watch me get better, you know. Maybe I'll start making sense to you a little later on. But the real deal is please keep coming back, you know what I mean? Because it's not just me that needs you, man. There's somebody out there right now that needs you real bad. And you might be the only big book they ever get to read. That's all I got.
I've asked Travis to read Dr. Bob's last message. Hi, I'm Travis. I'm an alcoholic. Delivered at the First International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio, 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces with the feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinite small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months and my strength has not returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flash into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with all the Freudian complexes and the things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when summed down to the last, resolve themselves into words, love and service. We understand what love is, what we understand what a service is. So let's bear 2 things in mind. Let us also remember to guard the erring member of the tongue, and if we must use it, let us use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so we were not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less unfortunate brothers, thank you very much.
This home group strongly believes in sponsorship. Will anyone that is willing to be a sponsor please raise your hand? Take a look around. Somebody might save your life. Will home group members please raise your hand? All right. If you would like to join this group, please see Monica. She has her hand raised after the meeting. And can everybody help me thanking my speaker and my readers? Anyone that would like to join us, we have a great way of closing with the Lord's Prayer.
I think I'm just going to go jump off the bridge right now.
Cool.
Sorry, Maritza. Is it off?
Our Father,
Father,
what in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power,
and
the
glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.